afternoon, and we're welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. We're shifting gears. We're shifting hard. Chatted about Israel the first hour with the consulate general. I never know what to call him exactly. See, the consul general or the consulate general? It's both. It's both on everything.
Hmm.
I can't decide.
Like consulate.
Yeah, so, you know, one time when I'm not talking to him, when I have people listening, I'm going to ask him, all right, which is it? And why is it so confusing? So this hour is going to be much simpler. We're going to talk about something we don't actually know a lot about it, but at least it's familiar. Familiar territory, education. We're here with Peter Murphy, Vice President for Policy at the Invest in Education Foundation. So Peter's the Vice President, and he has held that position since it was founded in 2012. It's Invest in Education Coalition promotes school choice and improving K-12 education. And I don't think anybody out there listening would say, oh, no, we don't need to do that. It's all good. We've got that all handled because we don't have that handled. So today we'll be discussing their important campaign to promote school choice through a national K-12 scholarship tax credit. So Peter was previously a communications director at the New York Charter Schools Association and statewide membership organization of charter schools in New York, which advocates on behalf of the state's more than 200 charter schools in operation. That's pretty awesome. 200. I don't know how many they have out here, but that's kind of great. Peter, are you in there? You're awfully quiet.
I'm here.
Okay.
Oh, there he is.
So I'm Aaron. We forgot to tell you that. You're like listening to people you've never met. We haven't even emailed with each other. I know who you are. You know, there's a weird little kid who texts me that periodically, but I had to call the police about that. So. I'm trying to cut back on I know who you are. I'm trying to stop making special friends, I guess is what I'm saying. And so, Bill, say something. So,
oh yeah, I'm Bill Cundiff. I'm the co-host here, and the sponsor of this hour is Team Power.
Did you see the way he just took that over?
Oh yeah, well, we're gonna go with it because you're kind of flopping around
I'm
over
drifting,
there like a
drifting.
Fish out of water. Yeah, you're all right. All right, I'll get you back on track. Team
Talk
Power is our local John
gods.
Deere and Kubota dealer, and right now, if you're looking for a great deal on a tractor, go see those guys. They have a full inventory of tractors, every shape and size.
How They're full at, is it?
It's really full. They're at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake, just north of Redding, and just south of Phil's Propeller. If you drive up the freeway, you can't miss them. Their phone number is 226-9226, and right now they're making some great deals. So go in there and see them. Either buy a tractor, get your tractor fixed, get your any kind of equipment, we can work on it and get it fixed up for you. Team Power.
Yeah, and if, you know, you have spare time on your hands, just go, you know, talk to the salesman for hours on end and have him walk you around and show you all the different models.
Yeah.
Oh, no, wait, don't.
Yeah.
Don't
oh,
do
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
I remember those days. All right. So we're going to swerve right back to education there. I forgot about the sponsorship part. Obviously, I'm not the marketing director. So
no, you're not.
I can talk tractors, too, by the way.
You can? What?
I can talk tractors too.
Oh,
see, there you go.
What kind of tractors? What color tractors are you talking?
Well, it's not John Deere. My father-in-law was a John Deere guy. I have something else.
What
God
do you
bless
have?
Him.
Cub Cadet.
Huh. Well, you know what? I used to work for International Harvester, so I can relate to Cub Cadet.
Isn't there a song about that?
Yeah, that's right. So. Talk to us about education. This
more tractors.
This new education foundation. What can you tell us?
What are you guys up to?
Well, we got established in 2012, and we were primarily focused on New York State, which has a robust charter school program, which I was involved in, as you mentioned, years before that. And really, the next step was to try and get more scholarship opportunities through K-12 education, because so many children in our state and so many children in California, particularly in these high-needs urban areas, really have inadequate schooling. And the public schools in so many of these urban areas, high-needs neighborhoods, are not going to get fixed overnight. They're not going to get fixed in 3, 5, 10 years, probably, sadly, not in our lifetime.
Well, but Peter, we could just throw money at it, can't we? We just keep pouring money into it. That's fixing it.
Well, that experiment failed, but you wouldn't know that from talking to the usual suspects.
Oh, my gosh.
Politicians who throw money at it, teacher unions, school district officials. And look, I don't begrudge anyone for wanting more money, asking for more money. That's understandable.
Unless it's my money.
But there's so much more that's necessary for education. And the political forces are such that it's very difficult to get change that happens quickly. And the trouble is children grow up quickly, as any parent can tell you. Children, you know, age fast, and we have one chance to get this right and provide them a quality education. So we felt the need to get beyond charter schools, because obviously a lot of children still can't get into charter schools. They have their own challenges in terms of rapidity and getting up to, and running, and many parents lose out on the lottery because they're oversubscribed, the enrollment admission process in these charter schools. And so we set out to get a scholarship program launched in New York State, which other states have, and that and the way to do that is to provide a tax incentive for more charitable donations to go into private scholarship funds so children from low-income households and working-class families can get scholarship funds and put their child in the best school they can find for them, the most suitable education for them, the way that rich people and upper-income people already have.
Is there a big demand? I mean, as far as the scholarship applications, big demand there? You get a lot more than you have available? Or?
Well, there's an enormous demand. Right now, you have one of the better-known scholarship funds in this that is based in the city of New York is called the Children's Scholarship Fund, and they have partnerships throughout the country, but most of their scholarships are given out in New York City, and I think they give out about 15 or 16,000 scholarships a year, not a huge number, and they're vastly oversubscribed. I mean, parents just would kill for that opportunity. And these are scholarships, mind you, that don't pay the full tuition, right? They're just, they affect the families at the margin. So parents have to have skin in the game here. And parents make enormous sacrifices to put their child in the best school they can.
Oh, sure.
And so the scholarship opportunity, I mean, you know, makes a big difference. And for thousands of parents makes enough of a difference to change the whole trajectory of a child's life. And so that's what we're trying to affect here. And we came very close to getting something passed in the state legislature to expand the donation incentive, the tax donation incentive here in New York. We came up short. And now we're really focused on this nationally because many states like New York and California really resist this kind of education reform. The teacher unions have the governors and the state legislatures in this vice grip, and it's very difficult to overcome that. And so many people coin school choice as a 21st century version of civil rights, and I think that's a very apt description. And we're looking to the federal government to advance a civil right for particularly low-income households in this country, advance that civil right and overcome the resistance that we see in state capitals throughout the country.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned that. The teachers' unions and such do have somewhat of a stranglehold on our California agencies, and we need to take a break. When we come back, let's talk a little bit more about that. How, you know, the common citizen can get access to these funds, and you know what types of programs are actually available outside the norm. So we'll take a break and be right back.
And be right back.
Sometimes the devil's on the loose in our school system. So,
I was thinking
so,
that to run through the jungle, that was kind of good. That was the playground.
The playground, yeah. It's just it's terrible. So, Peter, we're talking about public schools and or the lack of. How does a parent today navigate the public school system that, as far as I'm concerned, is in shambles? We've got a teachers union that has a stranglehold on the state government. We've got people trying to homeschool their kids and get nothing but grief, you know, toe the line, you know, inspections. You know, they want the kids in public schools strictly for the money. It's become more about the money than it is about actually getting the kid a good education. And as a person that has to hire people that come out of our public schools, I'm shocked at what our public schools are putting out, and it's embarrassing when these kids get out of school and they can't do common math problems. They can play on the computer. They're really good with that.
Come on, your last employee quit by sending you a text message.
Well, their feelings were hurt. Yeah, so you know, I didn't provide a safe space and a teddy bear and all that, but so. So, okay, I'm off my soapbox, Peter. Go ahead and tell us what we can do here.
Peter, pull Bill
pull
out of
the
trees.
Edge.
Pull Bill out of the trees. Come on.
Not to be facetious or anything.
Oh, come
right?
on, do it.
Yeah.
Well,
that's just my opinion. I could be wrong.
Public schools have been around a long time. They'll always be with us. They should always be with us.
Absolutely.
And they work really well for a lot of families in the country. Let's just stipulate that. This is not some broad brush condemnation
right.
of public ed. Not
well, it was when
that.
Bill did it.
Don't
but...
believe that.
Okay.
But for a lot of places, it doesn't work, and there's enormous resistance to change, and it's over time you have this calcified effect of these lengthy labor contracts that really govern how schools are run and how teachers are managed and public. Any education, any school setting is a very labor-intensive business, and you have a system throughout the country, in every state, in every locality. It's very difficult. It's the one industry where it's difficult to actually hold people accountable for their performance.
Yeah, I was going
to
say the biggest
right.
problem is accountability.
And you can't
and
you
I,
can't
I,
throw
I
money
that's
at
the
it.
Fundamental problem. That's the fundamental problem and shortcoming of public ed. You cannot hold the employees for performance. Every other industry,
except the VA,
even many in the public sector, you can do that. You cannot do that in education. And so, as a result, I think, and look, teachers face enormous challenges, right? I mean, for instance, this whole, and I'm not an expert on discipline, I just put this out there for thought, that when you have the federal government starting to dictate disciplinary policies in local schools,
yeah,
and that you know, they're bringing out quote-unquote guidance about you know, how you discipline kids. Well, look, I mean, if there's one place I'm enormously sympathetic to teachers, it's this tying their hands to discipline kids and remove unruly children from the classroom. It's outrageous that their hands would be tied and kept from doing that. So I think that's the place the union needs to fight.
No, I agree. I agree. I think teachers and cops, I mean, there's you put a teacher in a classroom that's overcrowded to start with, and then they have no authority to
and
maintain.
And the kids, of course, never pick up on that.
No, they never do.
No, not at all.
There's a lot of probably the majority of the kids do want to learn, but it doesn't take very many of them that just mess up the whole game.
That's exactly right, and so I just think it's an enormous disservice that's going on in many places of the country where learning isn't happening because the tail's wagging the dog. You know, the unruly children, you're not permitted to discipline them the way they need to be. And that's disruptive for everyone else. And so that's one set of issues. And there is pushback on that, in the Trump administration to pull that back and leave it to the purview of the states and localities to make those decisions. I think that's a good step.
Mm-hmm.
But even that effort by Betsy DeVos and in the Trump administration is getting resistance from, you know, the advocates, so to speak.
From the resistance.
What's that?
Yeah, from the resistance. Literally.
Right. So you have that issue. But what educational choice does is it just enables families of limited economic means to overcome that and say, you know, we're not stuck in this place. We're not stuck in our neighborhood school. We have flexibility. We have the ability to move and to change, and that's a good thing. And I don't begrudge teachers and public schools from getting whatever money they can extract out of state legislatures and Congress. Where it rubs me the wrong way is how they advocate against a better opportunity for children outside of their system. It's like it's all about this monopolistic control, and that's where I just find it really offensive that they're advocating against opportunities elsewhere in education. And that's the thing, that's the challenge for school choice that you have to overcome, that very pervasive, strong, and widespread opposition to what we're trying to do. Now, there's been enormous progress in school choice. It's been ongoing for 30 years. Charter schools have proliferated. Scholarship programs, tax credit programs have proliferated. 18 states have that now. Now you have education savings accounts that are starting to spring up around the country. 6 states have those. So it's ongoing, but it's been a slog, and there's been a lot of resistance along the way.
Well, and I think the I should point out, too, there's your executive director, Thomas Carroll, had an article in The Hill, and I don't know the date on that, actually. I posted the article and the link to The Hill, but I don't know what date. I think it was had to be pretty recent. Entitled Correct. Trump's School Choice Victory is Just the Beginning. And it's actually it's very well written, and it explains what you guys are basically looking to do. So if somebody wanted to do more research, you could find that on our site there at wethepeopleradio.us, and that'll link you right directly there. Talk to me about this, how this connected with the tax bill, or did it? Was it supposed to be in the tax bill, but then wasn't? Or?
Right. So back in December, the tax reform bill that just rewrote so many, you know, hundreds of provisions of the tax code, there was a provision that we advocated very strongly for, to use what are called 529 college savings accounts. These are tax advantage savings accounts to encourage families to save for their children's college.
And those currently exist.
Oh yeah, they've been around for 20 years.
Okay.
13 million Americans have them. They're probably worth near $300 billion in the aggregate right now. And, you know, they've been a very meaningful, effective savings vehicle for families to save for their kids' college. And so and Congress created these back in 1996 or 7. And each state followed the Congress and started their own kind of tax incentives to help people make those contributions and save on that growth tax-free over time. So they've been a very successful savings vehicle. What the Congress did in December was to allow what they call a qualified withdrawal. You can withdraw from your savings accounts for specific purposes, namely higher education expenses, right? College savings program. What the Congress did was to say, now you can use those savings as a qualified withdrawal to spend on K-12 tuition. If you're sending your child to a private or religious school, or even a non-resident public school, right? Some parents can actually send their child to another district they don't live in and pay tuition. If you do one of those three things, you can withdraw those savings in the 529 plan to pay that tuition. We think that was a great step forward, not a panacea, you know, not a game changer necessarily, but a really positive step forward. Of course, there was enormous pushback on that, large resistance from the teacher unions, but it passed. However, Aaron, one provision that did not get included was the homeschool part of that. You mentioned homeschoolers earlier. What the Senate amendment allowed for was homeschool families to have 529 accounts and use for their homeschool expenses. That was then disallowed by the Senate parliamentarian as, you know, not germane and violating the reconciliation rules, blah, blah, blah. And so that got knocked out. But still, it was a big step forward because now 529 savings can be used for K-12 tuition. That's a good thing, but it's not enough. We've got to build on that. We've got to do more, and there's plenty more to do, and there's plenty of opportunities for the Trump administration and Congress to do a lot more in this area and have real immediate results for children. I think that's what's so effective about school choice, that the kinds of things we're talking about, K-12 scholarship funds, education savings accounts, they can really make an immediate impact. This is not an impact that comes in gradually over 5 or 6 years. Meanwhile, the child goes from, you know, age 8 to age 14. I mean,
yeah, you know, a lot going on there.
That's too long a period to really.
Yeah, next thing
really
you know, they're out of the system.
Well, it's kind of crazy. Right. I mean, it's one thing if it was government, you know, if you're looking at government funding, and I realize when you give a tax credit, you are kind of pulling money out of the mix, but it's money people have earned. I mean, why can't they put it aside and use it for their kids' education? It always blows my mind. The Senate, I don't know, it's like the most inexplicable place. Things go there and just come out totally upside down.
Or don't come out at all.
Right, exactly.
That's where good legislation goes to die.
Using the tax code, so you mentioned, what, you know, the best school choice vehicle is not government spending, you know, vouchers, you know, adding a new program. I don't think that's really the way to go. That does not allow for kind of certainty and longevity.
Race to the bottom worked.
Pardon me?
Race to the bottom worked. It was enormously successful. Actually, they just called it Race to the Top by accident.
I think there were some good things that came out of Race to the Top. I mean, it did in New York, for instance, where I'm from, it did for kind of not force, but certainly greatly encourage the state legislature to increase the amount of charter schools that were available. That happened in other states. So that aspect of it, I think, was very positive. But there's some downsides to it. One of the things Race to the Top did was sort of usher in this idea of core curriculum, which a lot of parents rebelled against. And the interesting story there, and I always marvel when I hear the teacher unions condemn core curriculum. They were part of core curriculum. They were all for it back in 2009 and 2010. And then when the parents rebelled, the teachers union acted like it was someone else's doing when they were right there promoting it at the outset.
It's because there was such a huge outcry.
We want it. We don't like it anymore.
Yeah,
we have to take a really quick break, Peter. We will be back. And I want to get into some more about this, you know, how you guys can expand it and maybe what our listeners can do to be more aware, because you work with some 70 other organizations. So let's tie that together when we return. You are listening to We the People. You can join us online at wethepeopleradio.us. Back. Okay, so Peter, before we run out of time, we're not running out of time yet, but it always happens. Where,
Aaron, I love the classic rock bumper music. CCR, now BPO.
We have others. We have others. There are others. You know, I stopped listening to music really somewhere in the early 80s.
That was a good time to stop listening.
I've listened to, it's like, what is this and what are they saying? Please take me back to a time when I can understand what they're saying. Besides that, there was so much good. There was great political music back then. Works nicely for us. Okay, so how are we going to tie in with all these other, 70 different organizations? I know you can't list them all for us. They're probably on your website, but
So we have started up, the Investment Education Coalition started up an initiative called the EdTaxCredit50.org, EdTaxCredit50.org. And on our website there, the initiative's website, we have actually over about 250 organizations now who've signed up in support of a K-12 scholarship tax credit for Congress to enact so that children throughout the country, in every state, in every urban area, to be able to obtain a K-12 scholarship and send their child to the school that best meets their needs. This is, it's important to have a 50-state solution here because, again, only about 18 states have a state tax credit scholarship, and even among those, most of those programs are fairly modest. You have maybe four or five states that have very robust programs with a lot of participation, states like Arizona and Florida, Pennsylvania. But we need to do much more, and there's just too many children getting cheated right now in the years where we need to rescue them. And Congress has a role there. There's an enormous opportunity for the Trump administration to correct a very real problem and to correct it quickly. And so what we've tried to do to get away from Race to the Top and No Child Left Behind, these were initiatives that were very top-down, very Washington-directed.
And we all know they do such a great job.
Yeah, well, what this does instead is to use the tax code and direct private investment, private charitable donation, to invest in scholarship programs, to invest in children, to give them a way out, to give their families a better education for their children, and drive much more charitable money into these scholarship funds, which every state has such programs, privately operated programs. I mentioned the Children's Scholarship Fund based in New York, which has partnership programs throughout the country, in about a dozen areas around the country. And so if we can get more charitable money into the hands of families, it's going to drive choice and opportunity throughout. And just as an indicator of how effective this really is, this is something that teacher unions are dying on the hill about. I mean, this is something they just cannot countenance, and they fight tooth and nail every time. The last state to do this at the state level was Illinois, and it was enormous odds to overcome. But the teacher unions know the effectiveness of this, which is why they fight so hard against it. So we need Congress and the president to step up and get this done nationally.
So is this, you mentioned Arizona and Florida is having a robust program. What are they, is this something they've incorporated, or what are they doing differently than the other states?
So what Florida did, for example, now they don't have a state income tax, a personal individual income tax, but they have a corporate income tax, and what they allow companies to do is make a donation to scholarship funds and get a tax credit for it, meaning that whatever you donate comes off of what you owe the state up to a certain limit.
Mm-hmm.
So it really drives a lot of money into
scholarship
funds.
Sure, that's a great idea.
State. So what you have then in Florida, you have over 100,000 children now, just annually. And this is built up over the last 17 years they've had this program on the books. You have over 100,000 children in Florida from low-income households that are going to private schools because of it.
Right.
Well, that's
pretty cool. Yeah, because people would rather give money to education than give it to the government, because one way or the other.
Exactly, as long as it's going to be spent, you know, for something that will actually help.
And look, using the tax code this way to affect private money, to direct private investment. I mean, that's not new. That's been going on since the dawn of time, really. And you hear about that in economic development schemes. And I mean, you even have it for, we want movies to be filmed in our state. So we'll give these movie moguls a big tax break. Well, okay, maybe that's defensible. I don't know. But in this case, let's use it for education. Let's use the tax code to drive money into education so that people can make their own decisions and have more freedom to choose something better for their child. And look, for most families, they're satisfied, their public school works for them. And that'll continue, and it should continue. But for many others, let's do something efficacious for them. And that's what these scholarship tax credit programs have been doing. We've seen it work at the state level in several places. States are laboratories of democracy, as the saying goes. It's time to make this national.
It looks like a lot of the I was looking on your edtechscredit50.org website and the people that are connected to this, and a lot of them are Christian schools. You have a lot of religious schools and in this, and it seems like they're looking for the innovation, which makes sense.
Well, right. I mean, more than three quarters, maybe 80% of private schools are actually having a religious affiliation. So it stands to reason that they would be promoters of this. And many religious schools are, you know, they face challenges and you know, Catholic schools have been closing for the last 40 years
yeah.
for various reasons. And so that's one example. But for many families who can't afford it, they, you know, Latino families, African-American families, they want that structure and that discipline and that value system in their child's schooling. But they can't access it. They don't have the money. They don't live in the nice area to do that. So this is something that can give them that access. And again, we've seen this work now. What the scholarship tax credit would do would be to expand it so more resources flow to these scholarship funds and more families get the help they need.
Well, that makes sense. I was looking down your list. I don't know, maybe it's just me, but how is it I pick these things? So as I'm flipping down the list, I see there's an organization called GHETTO, G-H-E-T-T-O, that obviously is an acronym, but it doesn't say what it was. So I clicked on it to find out what it is, and it goes to a blank page. So apparently, apparently we don't have a GHETTO.
Well, no, I mean,
the ghetto's fixed.
These are real folks that do work, you know, in the communities.
Yeah.
Throughout the country. Some are small, some are larger.
Yeah, because you have like Homemakers of America.
Getting a better education for children.
Yeah, Homemakers of America. I mean, there's really, it's a huge variety of people that
are
plugged in.
And we have labor unions.
Oh, I didn't see those.
We have law enforcement and firefighter unions that have, you know, many of whom grew up and were educated in Catholic schools, people who fight fires.
Here you go. Professional firefighters. Fraternal Order of Police, State Troopers, and here's the Supreme Court Officers Association. I mean, yeah, you guys have cast a wide net.
There's a strong connection to religious education that many of the people who run these unions and many of these people who protect us on a daily basis, they're Catholic school products, many of them. They want that for their kids.
I am. Is that where I got my spicy attitude?
So many of these labor unions have been in favor of this kind of thing. They want it for their kids. It works for their children, and they want to see it to grow and expand. And so they've gotten on board with our effort. So right now, Aaron, we have there is a bill in Congress that was introduced by Congressman Lloyd Smucker from Pennsylvania, and it's called the USA Workforce Tax Credit Act, and it has the K-12 scholarship piece we've talked about, but it has an added element, and that is, in a growing economy, you know, one of the things that many companies are faced with right now is lack of skilled workforce, because many children have gone through the K-12
yes.
system, not gotten the education they need. They lack the skills that these companies are looking for, and jobs have gone begging, unfilled. And so this has a dual purpose of both encouraging people to invest in scholarship funds and make charitable donations to those for K-12 opportunity, and then secondly, to encourage businesses to invest in workforce development and skills training, so children that are coming out of this maybe with a college or maybe with a high school diploma or even a college diploma to get the kind of skills that these companies are looking for now.
Sure.
Well, that was one of the platforms that Trump ran on was job training. You get these kids out of high school and pay companies to hire them and train them on the job. And so they can be, you know, they can develop some sort of job skills that they can use to you know, better themselves.
Hey, Peter, tell me, do you have the bill number? And I'll post that for people.
Yes, I do. It's H.R. 5153. 5153.
Okay.
And I would encourage your listeners to call a member of Congress. Tell them to get on board, co-sponsor that bill, and get it done this year. And, you know, look, job training is not a new idea, obviously. I mean, government runs job training programs, but who are the best determiners of the skills that are needed? It's companies that are looking to fill jobs.
Yep.
They're the ones that know what they need. So let's give them the tax incentive to make that investment and get that quick turnaround, as opposed to sort of a government bureaucracy that thinks it knows what the private sector needs. I don't know too many bureaucrats who spent much time in the private sector. Let's give that tax incentive to the businesses who are trying to fill the jobs now. That's what Lloyd Smucker's bill does, 5153.
Well, plus it's closer to the source, because all communities aren't the same. I mean, they just aren't the same. We're in far northern California. We have very, very different wants, needs, and desires, and all points in between than, say, the folks
It's a kid coming out of
Southern California
with a big high-tech type skills is going to be hard-pressed to find a job in this area. I mean, there's just no high-tech around here. So, that makes total sense.
One of the things Congressman Smucker talked about, we had a meeting with him recently, and he himself comes from a business background. He started a sheetrock contractor way back, and it just became a larger construction contractor that he operated. But the average age of a welder in this country is in their early 50s.
Yep.
The average welder's age is in the early 50s. So who's going to be doing the welding? Who's going to be repairing the bridges?
Yeah.
Right. We need those jobs filled, and they pay well.
Yeah, plumbers and all these things. Our trades are really struggling. We have to take a really quick break, Peter. We'll come back and finish up with you to the top of the hour, and probably better make us talk about stuff that if we've skipped around. Otherwise, you know, it's going to happen.
We always stay right on point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. We'll be right back. I'm adding this bill number and all that stuff to the webpage at wethepeopleradio.us.
God bless you, please. Mrs. Robinson. Heaven holds a place for those who pray. Too much money they spend upon the moon. Well, I too, they make it right. I hope they never sleep at night. They better make some changes, do it soon. Take it.
A little Skinnered at you there.
So did you like Mrs. Robinson? I wasn't sure what kind of a sense of humor you had, but anyway.
Uh-oh.
Are there? Peter's in the cone of silence.
No, I'm here.
There. Well, you were in the cone of silence on our end. anyway, I'm like, I don't know how old he is. I don't know what kind of a sense of humor he has, but Mrs. Robinson should get a laugh out of him a little bit.
Well, hey, I saw Simon and Garfunkel in Central Park in 1981.
Exactly.
Big reunion tour. Back when reunions meant something.
Yeah, actually. Yeah, really. Yeah, when they had the actual original people because it was a reunion. Now the reunion.
Now it's like reunion every 3 years to pay the bills.
Yeah, no kidding. It's abused. All right, so what have we missed on this or not covered that people should know?
Well, I think it's important for folks to not be discouraged. This is an ongoing fight. It's a war. It's long-term, and, you know, democracy still exists in this country. It's sometimes it's hard to believe when you watch the news. It looks like a big insider's game, but Congress members really do react to their constituents. It's not the only thing they react to. It's not the only influence path, but people need to get active and make phone calls and not just that, not just for, say, a school choice issue, but just get active locally. Speak up in their local schools. Talk to their principals. It's their child's education at stake here. And, you know, it's very important to make your voice heard, because people do listen, and the cumulative effect of that, and that's really what this is about, and why we're doing what we're doing and building this coalition and getting these 250 organizations from across the country. It's amassing a coalition of voices to make an impact in Congress and in state legislatures so people get heard and action takes place and we accomplish something. It's one step at a time.
Well, I think sometimes people feel like, as far as the education side of it goes, that it's a big lift. What about the people that are homeschooling? Ashley was saying she has a friend that homeschools, and this all seems to cut around them.
Well, homeschoolers to me do probably the biggest public service that one could ask for. They're educating their own children, and there is, most states have some degree of oversight to ensure that they're doing some minimal effort there. But homeschooling has been enormously successful in this country, and you know, we constantly read about how well homeschool children are and go into college and just excel vis-a-vis their peers. So homeschool families, to me, make a big sacrifice, but they do an enormous public service because, look, where they're living, they're still paying taxes, right?
Right.
They're supporting the public school system. Nobody's exempt from that. And yet they're not an expense on that system. You know, they're incurring the expense themselves and saving the public system the expense of educating their child. And so I think that deserves some respect, and I think that deserves some support, and that's the attempt that was made in last December that we talked about earlier, where the Senate tried to, the Congress tried to get homeschool expenses qualified for 529 plans. That failed.
Yeah, and that ultimately was clobbered by Ron Wyden, that idiot from Oregon, just north of us, and Bernie Sanders.
And again, I go back to a very, really sad development that I've observed in my career over the last 20 years, where education reform, at least parts of it, charter schools in particular, used to be a very bipartisan issue. I mean, Bill Clinton was an enormous champion of charter schools, and he did really great things while he was president. He started the whole charter school funding program that helped schools get that critical startup funding when they were just getting approved at the state level, but they had like a year and a half to open, so money wasn't flowing yet at the state level. They weren't having any kids, but they weren't having any, you know, enrollment. But there's enormous expenses in starting and opening a charter school. And the federal government, thanks to him and his leadership, stepped in and got that done. Charter schools were a very bipartisan education reform. 20 years later, it's like maybe like other issues in our country, the nation's very divided, the parties are very divided, they're sort of dug in on opposite camps.
Mm-hmm.
And I've talked to many Democrats, particularly in my home state of New York, and they know this. They know school choice is a good thing. They know scholarship funds are a good thing, that their own constituents would stand to gain enormously from such programs, and yet they can't bring themselves
to fight for the team
publicly and defy the teachers' union and get it done, because the teachers' unions have basically camped out now with the Democrats, and they're in this vice grip of the teacher union's political support. And even Governor Andrew Cuomo back in New York was at one point during the last 7 years was actually advocating for a number of educational choice initiatives, and he has since backed off of that because the teacher unions got to him. And it's an unfortunate development because he can do an enormous amount of good and change the lives of children throughout the country, you know, throughout the state of New York, certainly, and being a model and an example. And he's just chosen not to do it. He's camped out, with the kind of traditional system and the traditional way of doing things. And a lot of kids lose by that.
Yeah.
So that's an unfortunate development. The partisanship of school choice these days is, I think, a very sad, development, because it shouldn't be a partisan issue. It should be a very nonpartisan issue. And again, I would just stress, Aaron, that one of the things that I've said over and over again is, and I deal a lot with legislators on this subject, if you're for school choice, it's not like you're against public schools, right?
Right, but that's the way the argument's framed.
Exactly. Yeah. The teacher union's message to legislators is, if you're for that, you're against us.
Yep.
And that's,
you hate public school.
If you're for bridge repair, you're not against public education. If you're for environmental protection, you're not against public education. if you're for school choice and educational opportunity, you're not against public education. You can be for both. And the teacher unions paint it very, you know, us versus them. And I think that's counterproductive. It's completely erroneous. It's dishonest. And I think politicians, it's very important for them not to fall for that ruse, that they can be for both. You can be the steadfast, strong supporter of public education, as every elected official should be, and also be for educational opportunity and choice for families that want that for their child.
Yeah, unfortunately, the in a lot of cases, not in all cases, but the teachers' unions are for teachers' benefits and not the students'
benefits. It doesn't benefit the teachers either. That's the bad part.
Well, it does, because the districts get more money with the more kids they get.
Oh, and they give it all to the teachers.
Well, not really, but I mean, when you have, you know, overcrowding in the schools, then they're going to throw more money at you. And,
true.
It's kind of a vicious circle, but you're right. It, just because you're for school choice doesn't necessarily mean you're against public schools.
I don't know a single politician. What lunatic politician would be against public schools?
Yeah.
It makes no sense. And none of them are. I've never met anyone who is. But you have them for, they are for choice, and yet they're painted as somehow against public schools, or they're going to hurt neighborhood public schools. It's crazy. But that's what's spoken of. And again, I don't, you know, unions have a very vital role in our society. They fight for better working conditions, wages, sometimes benefits. That, you know, I don't begrudge that to any teacher. But when they get into the political realm and their goal is to deny an opportunity elsewhere, you know, that's where the fight exists.
Yeah.
And that's where the acrimony has built up.
It's interesting the word choice brings up, you know, like the VA has this, they have a program called Choice. And the big opposition to that is through VFW, American Legion, AMVETS, all of the large service groups object to veterans having a choice other than VA. They want them trapped in the VA system with no options. And it's like,
Because it's a cottage industry. There's a lot of jobs.
That's just bizarre.
That are tied to an existing delivery system.
That's right.
Whether it's education, whether it's veterans health care, it's built up over time. And in many cases, it's proven ineffective. And in the case of the VA, as we've seen tragically, it's had tragic results in some cases. But it's a vested interest. It's a cottage industry. A lot of money's tied up in it. And they fight to keep that status quo. But who gets hurt?
Yeah.
Right? It's the people who are using the system.
We have tragic results of our public school system right now.
Exactly.
I mean, it's you know, when you're, you know, the folks on the ground that have to, you know, deal with these kids when they get out of school, this is the end result that everybody is looking at, and we've got to do something. We've got to do something to change it.
Well, again, back to that education, that USA Workforce Tax Credit Act, that's handling both the K-12 years of a child's life, but also dealing with that population who graduated or maybe not graduated, you know, who need those skills, and this enables companies to invest in getting a skilled workforce. And so, again, I appreciate the opportunity you've given me to talk to you and
absolutely.
Talk to your
and we posted H.R. 51. Yep, we posted
Congress.
It on here for you.
Thank you so much.
People
Sharon
can track that and
all
go
right.
See what your member of Congress
Peter,
is doing.
Thanks for being on.
Peter Murphy, Vice President for Policy at the Invest in Education Foundation. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll be back next week. You can find us at WeThePeopleRadio.us.